All right, the title for the shiur, I was asked, was the title posted? Yeah? What? The scroll that stole Yom Kippur. Does anyone know what the shiur is going to be about? Are you familiar with the shiloh? You know the story. Oh. Okay. All right. Okay. So, you were not there. Okay. I'll describe the way it was described to me. I think it's a fascinating story. It's a story that almost like a Where's Waldo of halachic shiloh, where you have to, you know, find in the scene all of the halachic issues that come up, and then you could address one by one. I was not there either, nor was I really asked about it on the spot, but here's the story that happened. It was Yom Kippur in a shul that's not very far from here, and it was at Chazaras HaShatz of Shachris, and everyone's enjoying a beautiful davening, and all of a sudden they hear the chandelier is like rattling, and that's a little bit, disturbing to hear the chandelier rattling. And people looked up and they saw that there was a squirrel running around in the chandelier. Apparently there was a hole in the ceiling or something. They had been doing some work on the roof, and a squirrel had gotten in through the roof and was running around in the chandelier, which was bad enough, but then when it fell down and started running around in the shul, so apparently the squirrel fell down, started running around in the shul. Apparently immediately the Baal Tefila ran for the exits, so he disappeared in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz, and there was chaos, as you could imagine, as the squirrel's running around the shul in the middle of Chazaras HaShatz and Yom Kippur. So people are running all over the place. They don't know what to do. Some of the doors of the shul, there are lots of exits. It's a large shul. Some of the doors are alarmed. They all say they're alarmed, but some of them actually are alarmed and some of them aren't. That appears to be the minhag, that they should say they're alarmed, whether they are or not. I know in DRS for years, we had a door that was not alarmed, but it said it was alarmed and everyone used it. And now it's alarmed and every day it goes off. So some of the doors are alarmed, some aren't. They start opening up every single door. Alarms are going off. People are running around the shul. They're not sure what to do. They're trying to catch it. One guy takes his talus and he gets it over the squirrel for a second, but then it squirts out from under the talus. At some point, the rabbi says, okay, everybody over to the left side of the shul. Maybe we could isolate it on the right and then we'll be able to chase it out. That didn't work. At some point, they see the rabbi with a cookie trying to lead the squirrel out of the shul. Where the rabbi got a cookie from in Yom Kippur, they're not exactly sure. But he's trying to lead the squirrel out of the shul, and everyone is running all over the place. And finally, they say that everyone just has to leave. Everyone's got to, you know, first they don't know who to call, so you know the security guys, the frum guys who agree to miss davening and stand outside and be shomer the security, which is very important. We need security. So they were called in first, as if they are more equipped to deal with this quarrel than anyone else in the shul. And it's obviously very chaotic, so the rabbi says, no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are in davening, leave. Everyone's got to get out of the shul. Once everyone's out of the shul, we'll be able to get the squirrel out of the shul, and then we can go back and go back to a normal davening. So this is the scene as it was described to me. So let's count the halachic issues in the scene that was. Did I get it right? Is that the way it was described? Is that the way it was described to you? What?
I didn't get that much detail, but yes,
it's sort of. Well, the person who explained it to me was very excited. So I assume most of what he said is true, but he's a very dramatic personality. He's like very good at NCSY, you know. So that's the story the way it was described to me. Now, al derech hakdama, the rabbi of the shul happens to be fantastic on many, many levels, and I don't know what I would do if I was him, but I certainly would not have handled it as well as him. I probably would have just gotten up and said, I quit, everybody. I'm going to go to the shul down the block. But he handled it, and we'll see in a moment. You know, whatever halachic discussion we have, was this right, was that right, was the other thing, I think he handled it mostly, you know, probably pretty much 100% correct, and way better than I would have handled it given the moment. It's very easy, given, you know, the time to think about it and study the sugyas and figure out. That's very easy. Anyone can do that. But he had
so
a much.
Did the squirrel leave, and were they able to return?
So ultimately, the squirrel left. I assume they got a guy to turn off all the alarms that were going off and shut the doors, and they were able to resume. Yeah, it ended well. I asked Rav Schechter. I was talking to Rav Schechter yesterday, so I knew I was going to give this shiur, so I wanted to hear what he had to say about it. He was not really that interested in the shaila, but he said. He said, I was in a shul in Queens, he said, a number of years ago. who's also not very far from here, a different shul, and I was calling residents in the shul, I was there for Shabbos, and in the middle of Shabbos davening, a squirrel came running into the shul. So I don't know what you got going on here in Queens, but there are squirrels running around shuls. But what are the halachic issues? If we had to find the where's Waldo, looking at this scene, you know, in our mind's eye, what are the halachos that come up over here? Snoop, what you got? Seda, good. So one of them is, can you trap the squirrel? It's Yontif. You're not allowed to trap things on Shabbos and Yontif. It's one of the Lamentas and Lachos of Shabbos. So are you allowed to trap the squirrel? That is number one.
Is it mutter to call someone for Tzachin Seber?
Is it mutter to what?
Like call an exterminator for Tzachin Seber.
Oh, to call an exterminator. They actually, I don't think they were going to call an exterminator because there was one squirrel. They were just going to get it chased out of Shul. Can the Chazan move? Or for that matter, think about it, it was toward the beginning of Chazaras HaShatz. So it's most, you know, a lot of the people in Shul are probably finished with their Shemona Esrei because you don't start Chazaras HaShatz, so most of the people are finished. But, you know,
there's always a few
that have davened a longer Shemona Esrei and are still in the middle of Shemona Esrei. They're silent Shemona Esrei. And they're being told, leave. So that's another issue. Are you allowed to leave? The Chazan and everybody else. Can they leave? In middle of the Shemona Esrei, you know, I once had Rabbi Tzvi Solinger told me that he's a rav in Bell Harbor. He told me his first year on the job in Bell Harbor, the chazan was in the middle of davening in Yom Noraim. I forgot it was Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, and he motions. It was like right in the middle of Chazar Shat, and he motions for him to come over, for the rabbi to come over. It's like, this is strange, you know, middle of Chazar Shat. What's he motioning for? He didn't understand. You know, sometimes, you know, during Kriyas HaTorah, the rabbi gets motioned for, you know, that they find a problem. And the chazan starts pointing to Asher Yatzar in his machzor. He says, pointing to Asher Yatzar. He says, what? You want to say Asher Yatzar? So, what do you do? Chazan's in the middle of it. He had to go to the bathroom very badly, and it was going to be a long Chazar HaShatz, and he was right in the middle. Someone else told me in the Young Israel Woodmere for years, there was a guy who would daven every year and would get so caught up, he would get very, and he was getting older, I guess, or something, I don't know, this was many years ago, that he would pass out, he would faint in the middle of davening. So the next year they had him daven a little bit less, only one day, not 2 days, or Shachris, not Musaf, and again he passed out, fainted. So you have to get a reliever in, you know, you signal to the bullpen, you got to get someone else to come in. But over here, so far we have how many issues? We have the issue of Seda, we have the issue of interrupting in the middle of a Shemona Esrei to leave, to walk out. What else? Opening the doors with the alarms is a third issue. I counted five, so you got three already.
If they're mafsik for a while, so they start
again. Right, I would put that in the broader hefsik issue, being mafsik in the middle, but you're right, it's a different halacha, it's a different sif in Shulchan Aruch. For what?
To turn off the alarms.
To turn off the alarms, okay. I didn't identify that as a major issue, because that's like sort of, almost like Maisim B'chol Yom in shuls. It's our chit zibur, the touching the squirrel. Halavai, they should have been able to get their hands on it. Mukta, okay. What else? Anything else?
Running the palace.
Running? I think in that situation we'd all run. You know? What did you say? So I think not just dragging the talus, you're using the talus as a trap for an animal. So you're trapping the talus. So is that an appropriate use for a talus? And also, just this one's not really an issue, but I thought it was fun. Feeding an animal on the Shabbos Yantif. He was trying to feed it the cookie. So
was he actually going to give it the
cookie? So that's why it's not really an issue, because he was going to lead it out, and as soon as the animal got out, he would throw the cookie somewhere, and the animal would probably maybe chase after him, maybe not. But I don't think the squirrel is really going after the cookie so much. And, you know, feeding animals is an issue that it was just on my mind around Yom Noraim time, because it always comes to mind when you think of Tashlich. You know, as a kid growing up, Tashlich was the time that people are supposed to socialize and feed animals, until you discover that you're supposed to do neither of those things during Tashlich. So at some point in your life, you discover those things. But the real discussion that comes up with feeding animals on Shabbos, Shabbos Shira, because there's a minhag to feed the birds on Shabbos Shira. There's actually some poskim that want to suggest that if it's midin hakaras hatov for the birds, so then maybe it's called like mezonosa melecha. But generally speaking, we assume not that way. When an animal is not mezonosa melecha, that doesn't rely on you for food, you're not allowed to feed. But if an animal does rely on you for food, you are allowed to feed. So for example, I always tell my kids when they invite friends over for Shabbos, they say, here's a good trick to play on your friend. So I always teach them how to make other people suffer. Here's a good trick to play on your friend. Tell your friend that we have 18 pets. Because we do, they just all happen to be fish. So and they're in one tank. So I have fish. So fish, are you allowed to feed the fish? And Shabbos told them, they're relying on me. But there's an interesting in Yalkut Yosef, the current chief rabbi, the Sephardic rabbi, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, writes that if it could go a few days without food, so then you shouldn't feed it on Shabbos. It's not really mizonos melacha. Which is a very tricky, slippery slope, no? You have to wait till the animal's holding by dying? I don't know if you have to. I think mizonos melacha, I thought the pashtus is that if it relies on you generally for food, so then you're allowed to feed it on a regular basis. I didn't think it has to be like that it needs this food right now. In Aruch HaShulchan, it says even if an animal is visibly hungry, that's called, and it doesn't have where to get food, that's called mizonos melacha. So if you show up to Tashlich, and you know, in the five towns, it's not the fish so much as it is the geese that are walking all over the place and you know dropping their leftovers. So if you show up down and you find a goose that looks very, very hungry, so maybe Taka, you would be allowed to feed it. Okay, but feeding the animal is not really an issue. So we have opening the doors and setting off an alarm, interrupting Shmoneh Esrei, trapping the squirrel, and using a talus to catch it, and many of the other ancillary issues that we mentioned. Which one do you want to attack first?
Trap.
Okay, let's start with trap. Excuse me. So trapping is nogea not only for this Maisa on Yom Kippur, it's more often nogea for the Yantiv that comes right afterwards, although this year it wasn't because no one was in a sukkah the whole sukkahs, but in most years when we have a minute to sit in sukkah on sukkahs and it's not raining and it's not freezing, so most of the time there are a lot of bees very often in a sukkah, so that's where it comes up very often. But over here, so there are a couple of basics in the halachos of trapping that are important to know. First of all, why did they trap in the Mishkan? What was the malacha? For the skins, right? They needed the hides of the animal to make the curtains and everything else. So that's where they would trap. So the halacha is that, generally speaking, a malacha shein sricha legufa is pater. Pater generally means pater aval as. So generally speaking, one is not allowed to trap, even if it's one is not allowed to do a malacha, even if it's a malacha shein sricha legufa. What's the definition of malacha shein sricha legufa? I'm doing the same exact action that they did in the Mishkan, but I'm doing it for an entirely different purpose. So when they trapped an animal because they needed the animal. When we're trapping a squirrel, no one wants a squirrel. We're not interested in a squirrel. We're trapping the animal because we want to get rid of it. We want it out of our lives. Same as trapping a bee in the sukkah. We don't trap it because we want it. We trap it because we want to get rid of it. That's what's called a malach shein sricha legufa. Generally speaking, in Hilchos Shabbos, malach shein sricha legufa is pater aval aser midrabanan. It's still going to be aser midrabanan. It is interesting, though, that when the Gemara talks about trapping in particular, the Gemara says, excuse me, tan rabanan, let me just make sure I get the right marker here. The Gemara says in Kuf Zayin Amar Aleph, Masechta Shabbos, Amar Shmuel, kol piture de Shabbos, pater aval aser. Whenever you see the word pater in Shabbos, it always means pater aval aser. If you want to say something's totally permissible, we have a different word for that. What's the word for that? Mutter. So when we say pater, it means pater aval aser. Levar mehani tlas, except for three times. There are three times where the word pater does not mean pater aval aser, it means pater umutter. Chada ha. And says Shmuel in Kuf Zayin Amar Aleph and Shabbos, one of them is a case of a tzad, of trapping a nachash, shal yashchenu, that it shouldn't bite you. That is pater umutter. The question is why? Why is it pater umutter? After all, isn't it a malacha shein sricha legufa? Right? Hatzad nachash b'Shabbos, imesasik po shal yashchenu, pater. If you're dealing with this, it shouldn't bite you, you're pater. L'refuah chayiv, but over here, so how do I know it's pater umutter? So the Gemara brings a raya that it's pater umutter. That you put you could take a kli and put it over an akrav that it shouldn't bite you. So if you're afraid that something's going to bite you, you're allowed to trap it. And that's why on sukkahs, if you're in the sukkah and you're afraid of a bee biting you, you're afraid of a bee stinking you, All the poskim say you're allowed to take a plastic cup and put it over the bee to stop it from biting. You're not trapping the bee because you want the bee. You're trapping the bee to prevent it from biting you. So why is it pater umutar over here? So the assumption is, the poskim explain, Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berura, that melacha shein tzricha legufa in general is aser midrabanan, but p'makom tsar, if it's going to cause a great deal of tsar, then it's going to be mutter. So bee stings are very painful, so that will cause a great deal of tsar. But what about a squirrel? Do squirrels do anything to you? They're a big nuisance. They're very, you certainly don't want them. They're little rats with big tails, but you don't want them around. But do they hurt you in any way? So most of the time when they see people, they'll run away. Now, the rabbi of the shul happens to be a medical doctor as well, so he had that advantage. And he said, forget everything else. This is at least what this person reported to me, is that the rabbi thought that it might have been a sakana. The thing could have been rabid because it was acting all weird. Now, one could argue that it was acting a little strange because it had just fallen from a chandelier into a room full of 400 people dressed in white. You know, so, maybe it was rabid for other reasons. I mean, maybe it was weird for other reasons.
It takes psychological harm into effect.
Oh, good. So what does it mean that it causes tsar? This is actually Machlokas Rishonim. Rabbi Tam writes that even a nuisance is called tsar, and that would be enough to make it mutter. I can't imagine there's a much greater nuisance than a squirrel running around your davening. So even that would be enough to make it pater mutter. However, the Beis Yosef disagrees. Beis Yosef says it has to be something that's painful. It has to be something that you're afraid is going to cause you actual pain. But some of the Acharon, Birke Yosef, and others think that the Beis Yosef is just being, it's a Chumrah. It's a Chumrah B'Alma that the Beis Yosef has, but it's not really required. Make Radin, it doesn't have to be that it requires, that it causes you pain. But the Mishnah Berurah, Pasan's like what it says in Beis Yosef, that only if it's going to cause you actual pain. Squirrel's probably not going to cause you pain. It's going to run away from you. It's not interested in being there anymore than you're interested in having it there. But he just doesn't know how to get out, and he's all out of sorts. But he's unlikely to cause actual pain. However, one could argue that if it's going to cause significant psychological trauma to the point where you can't function normally, that's what I would think. It doesn't have to be that like you're going to be in therapy for 10 years. It could just be that you can't continue to function. For example, if there's a spider or a cockroach or something in a room, so very often you could have a couple of people in that room, and you often have this with a husband and wife, where the husband is totally fine. Okay, it was a spider, big deal. We can't find it now. All right, so whatever it is, I hope it's happy. Maybe it found the crumb somewhere.
And they'll give you superpowers.
Right, yeah, exactly. So who knows? So maybe I'll get lucky, right? So the same thing, it's not a big deal. But sometimes there are some people, very often the wife, who will get very, in my house it's the opposite. My wife is the one killing it, and I'm like, let me know when it's gone. So there could be someone who just ceases to function. They can't. She's out. She's not coming back until you show her the carcass of whatever that animal is. So if she ceases to function, one could argue that that counts as a chaloshem basakana. Now, cholashem basakana, you're allowed to do melachshin srich lugufa anyway. It's a nisidra rabbanan. You're allowed to violate nisidra rabbanan for cholashem basakana. So, you don't need to question the threshold of tsar, not tsar. If someone ceases to function on a normal level, that's the definition of a cholashem basakana. So one could argue that would be the case when you have a squirrel. And anyway, the Beis Yosef, to begin with, is understood by many achronim to be a chumrah. That really any sort of significant tsar would be enough to do it. Another factor to keep in mind is that the Mishnah Masech HaShabbos is Machlokas Tanaim Masech HaShabbos, whether there's nisadar raisa of tzad on something that's ein bimino nitzad, on something that is not normally trapped. So how do you define ein bimino nitzad? Are bees normally trapped?
No.
So some poskim wanted to say, well, honeybees, people who cultivate, and try to produce honey, others say, no, they don't trap them. That's not the way they work. They attract them and they get them, manipulate them in certain ways, but they're not actually trapping them. What about a squirrel? Are those hats real? Are those made out of, the squirrel hats? Are they made?
Crockett?
Yeah, like do they use squirrel fur for anything? Is that
squirrels?
What?
There are people who hunt squirrels and eat them.
There are people, but normal people I'm talking about.
My company.
There are normal people.
In England, it's a delicacy.
No, my company.
Really? It's not like something you have to watch reality television.
People shoot squirrels.
Like, for real. People hunt squirrels to eat them.
Yeah.
So you're tying it's bimino nitsa. Very interesting.
Well, would it be like normally?
Right, so they tie in normal people. I mean, it's just not kosher, so Nebuch, we can't enjoy the delicacy. But they tie in that normal people do that. I don't know. Is that if you go, is there a restaurant in New York that you can go to? And,
no, I don't think
no.
So.
No.
I don't think any restaurants.
Yeah, so it seems like more like the last guy on Survivor, you know, like right, that kind of thing. I never saw the show, but from what I understand.
Mike Huckabee, a presidential candidate, said he eats squirrels. So.
You're what?
Mike Huckabee said he
eats Mike Huckabee said he ate squirrels.
He's crazy.
When there are 25 guys on the stage, you have to say something that distinguishes you, I think. So, yeah, especially when Trump's taking all the attention. And so Mike Huckabee is the biggest loser from the fact that Donald Trump is on it, because he would have been the sideshow. Now Donald Trump is the sideshow. Nebuch. Okay, anyway, this isn't a political discussion. So, in b'mino nitsa is machlokas, whether it's nisa d'oraisa or nisa d'rabbanan, we paskin it's only also mid'rabbanan by in b'mino nitsa. And that's also part of the heter that the post can quote when it comes to the bees and everything else, that it's in b'mino nitsa. And certainly b'makom tsar, in b'mino nitsa is going to be mutter as well. Yeah.
Here they could. It's not like by the case of a bee or something like that. They could leave their obviously supposed to go to the shul. They can leave the shul even if it's inconvenient. It's the fact that right. So,
one could argue having 400 people having to find a new place to daven on.
That itself would be tsar. That would be
maybe
inconvenient. I mean.
Right. Well, I think that's what tsar, meaning according to Rabbeinu Tam, that's what tsar is. Tsar doesn't have to be pain. It could just be something that's really annoying. So I would think that that would count as...
According to
the Beis Yosef, no. Beis Yosef has got to be physical pain. And I don't know, maybe a squirrel does cause physical pain, especially if it's freaked out and it doesn't know, you know, so it's not going to know what to do. Yeah, it may scratch its way or bite its way. I don't know, maybe that does happen. Some of the people in the shul are like older people and they just weren't interested in schlepping out. I'll sit here and you'll figure out what to do with the squirrel. Let me know when you're done.
I was just wondering, the Gemara in Sukkah does differentiate between pain that's memela and an avel.
That's a different kind of tzar. That's not physical pain the Gemara is talking about.
It's psychological.
Psychological, yes.
So too, a squirrel in the shul or something. Even if you're like really afraid of it, that's like
that. Rashi is a very big chiddush that he should get over his pain and get over.
The
Soloveitchik thought that most Rishonim are against that. That's the whole kiyum of avails, kiyum shebeleva, feeling the tzar. You don't say, you know, it's his own fault. But he's feeling the tzar and get over.
I mean, the Gemara says the bialei suvidaita. How are the Rishonim? I'm just wondering how
they. The what?
The Gemara itself says.
Havlei suvidaita. Yeah. Maybe to some extent. I don't know. Not sure. So anyway, yeah. So exactly how to be marketed the psychological pain, I'm not really sure. So I would think that in terms of in that situation, you know, between the Malach Shein Srich Lagufa element, which it certainly is, Ein B'mino Nitzod, which I'm still not convinced that this is called B'mino Nitzod just because Mike Huckabee, you know, is a squirrel. I think it would probably be Ein B'mino Nitzod. And the fact that it's causing a big tumult and it's stirring the whole davening Yom Kippur, I would think that's enough. So I would think trapping it is okay if they're able to trap it.
Would you be allowed to kill it?
Would you be allowed to kill it? So killing is more difficult. Killing it has to be something that's really threatening. So if you have something that someone might be allergic to, a bee sting, let's say, and a bee is in the sukkah, then you're allowed to kill the bee. Something like that. But I don't know. I don't think if you have a baby and there are wasps or whatever, you're probably allowed to kill the wasp, you know, if you're trying to kill.
Just
saying before that this Rabbi was saying it was a... Ah, so if he mamish held it with sakana, then they'd be allowed to kill it. Right, so one of the security guys could have taken out his gun and... Right. So maybe not. Although, right, then there are other malachas involved if that's how he chooses to kill it also. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if they're armed security guards or not, but probably, yeah, whatever. Okay, the shuls are all upgrading the security for obvious reasons nowadays. Okay, so that's the trapping issue. What else? What did we want to discuss?
Chazan,
Okay, so I got two. Okay, let's do the emergency exit first. It'll be a little quicker. Emergency exit is an interesting one. The reason it's interesting is if you know that it's alarmed, if you know that the exit is alarmed, so then what are you dealing with? You're dealing with a psik resha, right? A psik resha on something that's likely only a drabanan. It sounds an alarm, whatever that is probably only a dimmi drabanan. If it causes lights to go on, so you may be dealing with a daraisa, depending on the types of lights, but probably, whatever the sound of the alarm is only a drabanan. So psik resha on a drabanan for something that is, you know, that's b'makom a mitzvah for tzorach rabim. Probably you could be mekel. You could certainly ask the guy to do it, but probably you could even do it yourself. But let's assume even for a moment that a psik resha would be aser in this case. Let's assume that for a moment. I'm not sure this was a psik resha, because what was this? There are lots of doors, some of which are alarmed, some of which aren't. The doors that are, if you happen to open a door that's alarmed, which you have no way of knowing in advance whether it's alarmed or not, because they all say they're alarmed, right? Psik resha has to be almost certain, at least. At the very least. So one second, but over here, so what do you call it? If you happen to be touching on a door, opening a door that's alarmed, then it is a psik resha. But you don't know that you're touching a door that's alarmed. So that's the gedder of suffix psikration. Whether such a gedder even exists is a machlokas. And ironically, the major discussion of suffix psikration starts when the Shulchan Aruch talks about it, and the Nosi Kelim and the Shulchan Aruch talk about the malacha of tzad. Comes up in tzad. The Taz talks about it. You have a box with some flies in it, let's say. You open up the box and a bunch of flies fly out. And there's one little lazy fly maybe not. You don't look. You don't know what's in the box. There might be one lazy fly that's sticking around. It's like, hey, where did all my friends go? And he's just sitting there in the box. So are you allowed to close the box if you don't know if there's a fly in there? Now, if there is a fly in there when you close the box, so then it's psikreshe that you're doing tzad. If there's no fly in there, then you're doing nothing wrong. But you don't know if there's a fly in there. So what's that called? So that's what we call a suffix psikreshe. The Taz says you can close the box, and even if you don't know, and the Bir Halacha points out, oh, you see from the Taz that a suffix psikreshe is a din of a davashen miskavin, and it's mutter. That a davashen miskavin, when you don't know for sure it's going to happen, so that's mutter. So a suffix psikreshe, because it will definitely happen if you were clear on the mitzius, but a suffix psikreshe is a din of a davashen miskavin. Who disagrees with the Taz? Is a Rikiveger in Yaradeya. Rikiveger in Yaradeya in Hilchos Basar B'Chalav. It's amazing how Torah works. When you deal with principles and concepts, so you're not dealing with a topic, you have to deal with every topic. So Rikiveger in Yaradeya discusses stoking a fire that's underneath a pot that's a non-kosher pot. So there might be Basar B'Chalav in the pot that you're stoking the coals in. And if you turn the fire higher under Basar B'Chalav, it's going to be an Isra of Bishul Basar B'Chalav. The Torah says three times, Lo Sevashel Gedi B'Chalei Bimau. You're not allowed to cook. Okay, one time for Isra Achila, one for Isra Na'ah. But you're not allowed to cook Basar B'Chalav. So Rikki Vega says, but you don't know. You don't know if there's Basar B'Chalav in there or not. It's still you're not allowed to do it. Why? Because if there is, it's a psik resha that you're going to be cooking it. So you see, Rikki Vega holds that a suffix psik resha is asr. So this is Machlokas Taz and Rikki Vega. Rav Asher Weiss has a ha'ara, I think many have had, I don't think it's just Rav Asher, many have had the ha'ara. What exactly is really the difference between a suffix psik resha and a davar shein miskavin? Give me the classic example of davar shein miskavin.
You drag a bench
and you don't know if it's going to make a hole or not. So why isn't that a suffix psik resha? If I knew enough, I would know if it's going to make a hole or not. No? If I knew the exact weight of the bench, the condition of the soil, the atmospheric conditions, I knew the physics of it all and the angle that I hold the bench and how that's going to affect the soil. If I knew all the information and I was able to do all the math in my head, I would know exactly what's going to happen. Elamai, I didn't do all the math, I didn't do all the research, and therefore I don't know. But it either is or isn't. It either is going to make the hole or it's not going to make the hole. So isn't that also a suffix psik resha? So meaning, a davar shein miskavin by definition is a suffix psik resha. That's what they bring, that's what they argue to defend the Taz. That the Taz is making on a suffix psik resha, because he says, how are you going to distinguish between a suffix psik resha and a davar shein miskavin? So what's the answer? How are you going to distinguish? Can you distinguish between the case where you have the, maybe there's a fly in the box, maybe the door is alarmed, maybe it's not, versus maybe this bench weighs enough and the soil is soft enough and the angle that I hold it is just right? That, is there a difference between those? So something that you could see is an obvious, something that, you know, that it's an obvious condition that has to be met, that a layman can figure out just by opening his eyes and just by knowing some basic information. That would be a suffix segregation. But something that would take like this this tremendous research and detailed knowledge, you know, to the human eye, maybe would not be a suffix segregation. I think Rav Asher talks about this in his Tshuva on baby wipes. He talks about the element of suffix segregation. Is it really, are you squeezing anything out of the wipe? So he said, to the human eye, it doesn't seem like you're squeezing anything out of the wipe. It looks like just it's cleaning off the area. It's a big discussion. I don't want to get into that now. Yeah.
Yeah, by Rabbi Akiva Eger, meaning he's not a bus for a call, could it be that he's by Shabbos he would agree with the Pasuk because it's not Malachas Machshavos?
Ah, so maybe the Geder is different from Malachas Machshavos. So by Shabbos, it would be more Mekel, maybe. There's discussion of this. I don't remember. Yeah, could be. So I would think in this case, you know, psikreshi de la nichle, makam sarach gadol, and it's a suffix psikreshi, it might even be davashen miskavit. So I think it's, you know, excuse the pun, an open and shut case, that you're allowed to open the doors. I don't think it's a problem. What about interrupting the Shemoneh Esrei? So most of us are familiar. There is a Mishnah Maseches Brachos. Afilu nachush korach al akeva lo yafsik. If you have a snake around your heel, don't stop your Shemoneh Esrei. I challenge you. Snake around your heel to continue focusing on your Shemoneh Esrei.
But that's reality show.
Right, that's, you know, to continue focusing on your Shemoneh Esrei. Not meaning, because if you can't focus, then of course you have to, what are you doing? But to continue focusing on your Shemoneh Esrei, you know, I just saw somewhere that they say, Ramesh had a problem, he didn't like with the, many shuls have like a bench behind the bima where they had two holes where they would stick the Sefer Torah. Ramesh has a tshuva, he doesn't like that at all. Why? It's beneath your cover to hold the Sefer Torah, so you got to stick it in the bench. You know, sometimes people give it to the kid. The kid who did Galila, let him hold the Sefer Torah, because what could go wrong with that, right? So Ramesh didn't like the idea of sticking it in the bench. It shows that it's like beneath you. And the I saw somewhere, I forgot where, that it comes from you based Midrash Shalak Sav Sofer. And in the Ksav Sofer's base marriage, that's what they did. They put it in a bench with the holes and they to hold the Sefer Torah. Why? What was the Svara? Because the guy holding the Torah is going to have to be listening to the Haftorah. How could he focus on listening to the Haftorah when he's holding the Sefer Torah? It's going to be so hard. He's going to hold the Chumash and the Sefer Torah. And how's he going to be focused? It's an amazing assumption that people actually focused on listening to the Haftorah. You know, sometimes like, they're laying the Haftorah in Shul, and it's like one of my favorites or something. I'm like, they're laying these beautiful psukim, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome. And you just like look around the room to see like who else is enjoying it, and it's like, you know, not that many people, you know, that are enjoying. So where was I? So yeah. So what about interrupting? So it's a feel nachush karach ala kevel. So it seems very bad over here. Even if the squirrel's around your ankle, you're not allowed to be mafsik. So yeah, so we're mechalik the Gemara in Brachos Lam and Gimel. Amar Rav Sheshes Lo Shanuel Nachash of Lakrif Posik. But if it's dangerous, if it's something that's gonna kill you, so then you could stop. Yeah, but as far as you know, the squirrel's not dangerous. Even if it's so luchari, you shouldn't be able to stop. And the Rambam writes, Ein a mispalel mafsik tefilaso el mipnei sakonas nefashos bilvad. Sakonas nefashos. That's it. Short of that, you don't know, would these people bench Gomel? They really thought of Sakonas Nefashos? So probably not. So I thought that maybe it's a problem, but then you just look a little bit further and you see that it's not a problem at all. Beis Yosef writes in Simon Kov Dalin, Nimra Benu Yonah. Benu Yonah says on that Gemara, Chafal from Ralph Bedaper Rif, V'afal pi shein lo lahafsik uledaber afilu hachi yachal laleches kidei sheyashlichenu me'elav Shalom matzinu halicha shenikres hafsaka b'shum makom. Says Rabbeinu Yonah, we have to define the term mafsik. What does it mean that you're not allowed to be mafsik when there's a nachash on you? It doesn't mean you're not allowed to pause. It doesn't even mean you're not allowed to move. It means you're not allowed to speak. So if you're in middle Shemoneh Esrei, right, and there's something that's mafriya you, something that's in your way that's bothering you, move somewhere else and continue davening. And that's perfectly fine. And that's what Shulchan Aruch paskins. Shulchan Aruch paskins from Kuf Dalet Siv Gimel. Va'afil nachash karachal akevelo yafsik. Aval, says the Ramah, yochal leilich l'mokam acher k'dei sheyipol l'nachash meragla. You could go somewhere else so that the nachash will get off of your foot. Taz questions it, so there's a big tumult in the poskim. Bir Alacha says at the end, what I quote in the Mishnah Berurah is correct. Demakom sheyesh tzorach gadol yesh lismach al makilim tahalicha lo chashav hefsik ki kein eskimu kama achronim. That you could certainly rely that halicha is not called a hefsik, and therefore you're able to walk away. It's not a problem. In fact, I saw in the later achronim. They give examples. The Piskei Tshuvas quotes from all the later Achronim who give examples. And what do they say? Piskei Tshuvas in Siman Kuf Dalet Ha'ara 55 writes, "Umatzu ke'elu shema'avdim legamrius rikus ha'machshava kishemeshotit chatul b'svivatam o kishetzipur b'cheder." Happens sometimes in camp. You know, a bird gets into the shul and is flying around. And every kid is, you know, looking at the bird and is, so the kavan is gone at that point. Or there's in Eretz Yisrael, there are a lot of cats all over the place. So a cat walks into shul. So that causes everyone, so says Piskei Tshuvas, move, go to a different room, go somewhere else and finish your Shemoneh Esrei. That's enough. You don't need it to be the greatest. So in this case, with a scroll running around shul, the rabbi, I think, did the right thing by saying, okay, everyone leave. Even if you're middle Shemoneh Esrei, just leave. Go out, don't talk. Just go out of shul and finish your Shemoneh Esrei there. So I think that that's fine. What about being closer to the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei? Does it have to be? So the halacha is that only if he's mafsik k'dei ligmar skula, only if he's mafsik enough to finish the entire Shemoneh Esrei, then you'd have to go back. But if he's not mafsik that much, then you wouldn't have to go back. So I don't know what the metzius was. I don't know how long they were out for. Was it a half hour? That's probably k'dei ligmar skula.
Can they finish it outside?
Yeah.
Can they go outside?
They could probably finish it outside. Yeah. Yeah, yes, I wasn't sure how to define Kedei Ligmar Skula. I was asking him Shakt about this. He was that's the part that he was shtelling too on. He wasn't interested in the Tzedek issue and in the doors opening and the part of the Hefsik, that part he was talking to me about. So he wasn't sure either exactly how to be Magdir Kedei Ligmar Skula in this circumstance. You know, Yom Kippur people typically daven slower on Yom Kippur, but does that mean that's huh?
Also, let's say
you know. I mean, I guess most people don't, but a lot of people do dive in a half hour silence for an
Esrei. What if someone's up to like Mogdin? Does that count until the end? Can they link more school meaning from start to end or from where they are?
Yeah, so that I think is Beferish and Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, I really think Shulchan Aruch says start to end. I think this is, yeah.
But that I think is based on like the Matthias of the place, like say the certain place, some places dive in like.
Yeah, so that, I'm not sure. I don't remember if it's Adam Beinani or if it's, you know, or if it's what that place is. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Last one because it's getting late already. What do we have? Oh, using the talus. So a talus should not be used when it's a. Now, it used to be that where what would you use for tzitzis? You'd have a bag and you'd buy a nice cloak in the in the store and it would have four corners on it and you put tzitzis on it. But it was your normal bag. Nowadays, any bag that we have tzitzis on, we only put tzitzis on a bag that we buy specifically miyuchad the tefillah. So when you have or specifically miyuchad the mitzvah. And it's specific for the mitzvah. So talus gadol is a little more chumra than talus katan because it's not only miyuchad for the mitzvah; it's also miyuchad the tefillah. But even a talus katan, we treat it a little differently than we would have treated clothing that had tzitzis back in the old days when they would put tzitzis on anything. In fact, the Beis Yosef in Simin Yod Aleph goes through a whole thing of why we don't put tzitzis on any other kind of baguette. And he comes up with reasons that every other kind of baguette that we shouldn't have tzitzis on for all sorts of different reasons. But that leaves us with a talus and a talus katan that needs to be treated with a little more respect. So even to use it for personal use, suppose we discuss, can you wipe your glasses in your talus? Whether that's considered a tashmish bazui or not. So Rabbi Yashiv said, b'shas koshi, b'shas adchak, maybe that's not called a tashmish genai, and that would be mutir. But to trap a squirrel in it, so besides the fact that I don't think I would want to put on that talus again, but that would seem to be a tashmish genai to do with a talus. Probably they should take a tablecloth or something, find something else in the shul to trap the scroll with. I don't think that
sometimes
that's
you
the
only,
only
have
part.
Like 10 seconds.
Right, and they maybe the what are your chances of being successful anyway? Everyone needs to be a hero. Okay, so that's it for the squirrel that stole Yom Kippur.